We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. There's six area Knoxville locations and all across the Southeast and the world. It's goldsgym.com to download the free three-day VIP pass. And as always, swing in for a tour at your local Gold's Gym. Tell them you heard about them right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. They'll show you around, and then you can try it for free even before you sign up. It's goldsgym.com. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Going to go back to the McKinney team hotline. We're talking a little West Virginia, Tennessee, as we head towards, we're halfway through the month of August now, and September 1st kicks it off in Charlotte. Shout out to Doug yesterday, who won the Gear Up and Get on the Bus tour drawing out at Jet's Pizza. Stay tuned for your next stop on the Gear Up and Get on the Bus tour presented by Alumni Hall and Premier Transportation. But right now, to the McKinney team hotline, let's get Wes from the Mid-State on. What's up, Wes?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Wesley, long time no talk.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, I was walking the dogs, as I do, and early this morning listening to the top of the show, Houston, I heard you guys talking about Silence of the Lambs. And I got to tell you, I really expected Davey Hudson to be a little bit more on his bumper music game this morning after hearing that. You know, I thought coming back from the break, we might hear a little, "Goodbye, horses, I'm dying over you."
I know it's in the system because Talk Sports comes back to it at least once a day.
And I don't play other people's bumpers.
Yeah, but that was a good time for some situational bumper.
I don't want to have to listen to John and Ben.
You know, speaking of Silence of the Lambs, you know, what if they did a remake with the Fox Sports Knoxville crew starring in it? You know, maybe Davey Hudson with those long locks playing Agent Starling.
Ooh.
You have Russell Smith as the evil Hannibal Lecter. I could see John Reed down at the bottom of a well with a blonde wig on. Don't you make me hurt your dog! You know, and it's, as a disgusting sight as it would be, I mean, who among us couldn't envision Bear as, I mean, Bear is Jamie Gums? Does that not sound plausible?
Good.
Has he called in yet this morning?
He has not.
Not today.
He did text me a little bit.
Probably will now.
When Bear calls them, have him repeat the line, "Oh, wait, was she a great big fat person?
Was she a great big fat person?"
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
God. How disgusting would that? I'd have to close my eyes during that scene with Bear dancing in front of the mirror. Hey, listen, guys, you know, I heard you talking about the balls, and, you know, I was so skeptical of this season. I'm one of those ones that, you know, maybe we're 5-7, 6-6 if we're lucky. But, you know, the more I hear coming out of practice, you hear about how promising some of these, you know, I guess I thought the roster was maybe more, or I was led to believe the roster was more depleted with talent than it actually was. But you hear about these freshmen coming in who have really showed promise on the defense, particularly in the secondary with Alante Taylor, who's from down here in the Mid-State. And then, you know, I forgot about guys like Balaam Buchanan and, mm-hmm. and Todd Kelly Jr. and Nigel mm-hmm. Warrior. Abernathy's still there. You know, you look at the linebacking core with Kirkland Jr. and Batuli, and you still got Kyle Phillips, you know, going into his senior year. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe things aren't so bad. Maybe this could be a 7-5 kind of year.
Let's go, Wes. Let's do it. You want to stop at 7-5? You're sure that's your ceiling? You don't want you that's the one?
Well, I want to say 9-3. Then I sound like the aforementioned Bear mm-hmm. Jamie Gumbs. You know, so I'll say 8-4 is the ceiling.
Okay,
how
buy
about that. 8-4 is the ceiling, and let's take down those damn shorts wearing Gators. Have a good one, fellas.
See you, Wes.
Thanks for the call, Wes.
I love that voice. That's a good morning voice right there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a question for me. Where between Butch Jones is a terrible talent evaluator and this roster is not as good as the rankings suggest and the rankings being good, like where does this Tennessee team kind of fall on the scale?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
There's being as good as your rankings and there's being way, 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 way worse and overrated. Where does this team fall, you know, on average now with a different staff? You know, Kyle Phillips was a 5-star. That really gives you a nice ranking, but he hasn't done anything in a real game. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing that you would say, ooh, look out.
Yeah.
So does he, if he's been, if he was an A plus recruit but an F minus player so far, what does he become now on the scale? Right? Like, I mean, there's a bunch of guys you can kind of ask that question about. Kongbo, right? Another five star. He was an A plus recruit as far as how it helped your rankings. He's been about a D player, maybe C minus C. So is he now, does he become a B? Does he become an A? Does he stay the same?
Does he become first team all SEC?
You are on record. You are on record as predicting that. So that, like, those are questions that you're not going to be able to answer probably until the end of the season. But I'm wanting to know if in game one it is possible that you see a lot of those guys take. Now, there are going to be some that do nothing, right? That do not get better, that were, you know, I hate to use the word bust, but that were just overranked for whatever reason. But are there some of these guys that do make a big difference? And maybe even on the offensive line, too. I mean, we know this offensive line was not well coached under Butch Jones. I mean, Don Mahoney. Who was the other guy? The GA that we gave a raise to and a promotion because we couldn't find anybody else to come in and coach the line last year?
I don't remember. What was his name? Line GA. Mm.
The guy who was the offensive line coach last year.
I'll look it up.
Wells,
yeah. He was a GA that we promoted.
No. I thought like
Jerry
last year.
Kind of like we promoted the offensive coordinator from tight ends because we couldn't go get anybody because Nobody wanted to come here.
Yeah, who would come?
Right? Like the well was poisoned at that point. Nobody wanted to drink from it. Mm. So now that you get Will Friend, who does have a history of putting together really good offensive lines in different places, and these guys are coached better, and you're getting some guys back healthy, is the offensive line maybe not the issue that we think it will be or have kind of projected that it would be? I think you feel pretty good about the talent at receiver, the talent at running back, the depth. Tight end should be okay. Defensively, I think, is where the most questions kind of, you know, come. Like, can Daniel Batuli be as good as he was last year, or does he go and get better, you know, playing under Jeremy Pruitt? Is Darrell Taylor suddenly a guy that has flashed a lot but is now a consistent pass rusher off the edge in the 3-4? Do you get better safety play from Abernathy? Can they get Nigel Warrior to figure it out? Can you kind of make Todd Kelly into what we all hoped he could be? I just don't know. Because I don't think you look at this roster and say, yeah, no talent. It's a lot of guys that you have seen flashes or you know that there's ability there. They just haven't done it yet. But that's my question. Based on what we've seen and what they came in as, where do they get to potentially this year? And until I see something, I don't know how to project that. I do think you can expect them to get better, especially defensively, but how much? You know, if you're giving up 400 yards rushing to Missouri last year, do you cut that in half? Because statistically, that would be great. Yeah. But you're still giving up 200-plus yards rushing to Missouri. Right? I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what to expect. Do you at least force teams to play more balanced against you? Because that would be a win. Teams can't just run it every play. Well, hey, there's a win. There's some chances. But I don't know. I agree with Wes, though. I think as we get closer, you're starting to remember, man, like we've seen some of these guys. There is talent here. I would love to get Jeremy Pruitt in a room with no cameras and no microphones and say, are you more talented or less talented than you thought this team would be when you got here? Like, what did you expect and what are they? Did you come in expecting C-minus talent and you actually think you've got B talent, A-minus talent, or is it as bad as everyone kind of feared? I don't know. It's still weird to me that he hasn't said things like we had a bad practice or, you know, we have such a long way to go and blah, 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 blah. Like he seems fairly confident. He's not giving away much, but I think these are just things we won't know until we actually get to see this team take the field.
Yeah, I mean, we looked at teams that have rebounded from really bad seasons in the SEC yesterday. I think the ceiling would be the year Auburn won three games, and then the next year they're playing for the national championship.
Right.
I haven't looked back at that three-win team. I'm sure a big part of that. They had won the national championship a couple years before that. So I'm sure what happened is they had recruited really well during that stretch so that after the team won three games and got a fresh start, those players who were highly recruited players all of a sudden played like their recruiting ranking.
Yeah.
I hope that this year's team, while probably not nearly as talented as that Auburn team that played for a natty, can have a similar resurgence, at least back to their level, so that guys, you know, we talk about five-star Kyle Phillips all the time, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of other players that haven't played up to where their star ranking was. You've also had some attrition with some of the players that fell off this class, but you've had a lot of additions too. We just don't know how good Madre London's going to be, Keller Chris is going to be, Dominic Wood Anderson's going to be. A lot of people like to point out JUCO quarterbacks that just kind of flame out and aren't really any good. They're just kind of average or whatever. But, you know, we talked about Nick Marshall going to Auburn.
Yeah.
And after playing, what he played corner or was it wide receiver?
He was corner at Georgia.
A corner at Georgia. Yeah.
He was like a 4 or 5 star corner.
Starting at quarterback on a team that played for the national championship. I mean, you just don't know with all these
questions.
You say he's
a defensive Gus Malzahn, Jeremy Pruitt, and every time Gus Malzahn gets a QB transfer, good things happen to Auburn. Stidham, Marshall, he was the offensive coordinator with Cam, just saying.
You know, so can Jeremy Pruitt take an Alante Taylor, take some of these guys on defense that haven't done anything, and just give them a few simplified pointers, just a few things, and make that defense serviceable? And then on offense, you've got all these new bodies coming in. You know, are some of those guys difference makers on the offensive side? That'll be the ultimate question, and obviously one that will then lead into how good Tennessee can be for the season. ESPN put out a complete breakdown of the SEC, Houston. I want to get your thoughts on a couple questions piggybacking off of their little journey.
So this is like your SEC checklist heading into the season, things you need to know and follow,
right,
and watch?
Exactly.
This is good for us as we prepare for SEC Survivor. Actually, it's not, because we just draw them out of a hat.
9:15, everyone have a great day.
Our Eyes on the SEC is brought to you by IXL, 715 Callahan Drive, and online at IXLTN.com. They've got you covered right here in Knoxville. Family Eye Care and Vision Rehabilitation, it's IXL. You can go to IXLTN.com and request an appointment right there from the website, or give them a call, 865-687-1232. That's 865-687-1232. And online at IXLTN.com. Yeah, Houston, ESPN put out the SEC, everything you need to know about the SEC before kickoff.
Everything?
Everything.
Oh, well, good. We'll have it all ready then. Excited.
Yeah.
Excited to know everything about the season before it starts.
It was pretty disappointing. There's one mention of Tennessee in the entire
thing. So you are starting the segment?
With a thing
that you're already telling everyone is going to be disappointing?
Well, this should be good. The segment's going to be good. The post on
ESPN
is bad.
All right.
Those things can be separate. Here's a section from way down the sheet titled New Coaches Rundown. You'd think Jeremy Pruitt going to be a big part of the new coaches storyline, right?
Yeah.
There are four new head coaches in the SEC, and that's to say nothing of Matt Luke, who had the interim tag removed at Ole Miss, and Dan Mullen, who made the move from Mississippi State to Florida.
Mm, yeah, that's true. Not a new coach, just do school. Mm.
So, yeah, there's plenty of upheaval these days. Luke will have one of the most potent offenses in the SEC. Is that true? But has to continue to navigate scholarship limitations.
Well,
and one more season.
He's one of the 14, so he will be one of the most potent.
Without bowl eligibility.
Maybe 14th most potent.
Mullen, on the other hand, walks into a situation where expectations are already sky high, despite an offense that is in need of a serious overhaul.
Oh, you hate to see that.
Whether it's Felipe Franks, Kyle Trask, or Emory Jones, Mullen needs to find his quarterback in a hurry. Thanks to Mullen's tutelage of Nick Fitzgerald, new Mississippi State coach Joe Moorhead already has his quarterback. In fact, he might have the most ready-made-for-success job among all the new hires. Beyond Fitzgerald, there's a defense that returns a line that includes two All-SEC players in Montez Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons. Conversely, the two coaches with the steepest uphill battles ahead are Tennessee's Jeremy Pruitt and Arkansas's Chad Morris. Pruitt, the former Alabama defensive coordinator, inherits a program in disarray after a wild coaching search and far too many misses on the recruiting trail. And while Morris doesn't have quite the fervent fan base to deal with, he has his own issues to solve.
Who wrote this?
Considering the 180 he's attempting to pull off, turning a ground-and-pound offense into one predicated on space and speed. But with all that said, the new coach with the most interesting job has to be Fisher. The minute he signed a fully guaranteed $75 million contract, he put a bullseye on his back. The Texas A&M fan base is thirsty for a winner, and Fisher has won before at Florida State, but the rebuild could take time with no clear answer at quarterback and a history of poor play on defense to turn around. That's the whole section. I thought about quitting after Tennessee, but decided to finish that. Who wrote it? Alex Scarborough.
Okay. The fervent fan base.
Got that was me. A shot, right? Right?
I mean, no, and yes, I think. Fervent, I mean, just means passionate. It, you know, it just means...
But to deal with, that was...
Yeah, it was...
To deal with.
It was strange.
Like,
it
has
strange.
To deal with yeah, the Tennessee it was, fans.
It was...
Can't lean on the support of Tennessee fans.
It felt like a veiled shot.
Right.
It felt like, he's got to deal with these wackos.
Wackos.
He's usually pretty fair on the stuff I've seen
Scarborough,
from him.
Scarborough? Yeah, I'm like Houston. I don't even know.
Maybe. No idea. That did not feel... I felt like a little shot.
I'm pretty sure that's the only mention of Tennessee in this entire post.
I mean, we've talked about it. That's just kind of where you are now. You're kind of irrelevant. You won four games last year. They're going to talk about the teams that have fans that are interested in reading articles about how they can win the SEC.
We loved being at the tip of the spear of the hype train 2 years ago. Loved it. It's great for radio shows. Is this better? Would you rather be the team that might be most overhyped or the team that has no hype at all?
Well, Houston doesn't even want to win the championship, so I think he's going to take the latter.
I'll take it in year two.
Take the championship in year two?
Wait, what are you asking me now?
Would you rather be the team that might be overhyped, but you get to talk about your team more, you know, you're in the news, or would you rather be at the complete, like, sneak up and beat somebody? Like, would you rather be the underdog? Not so much that you'd rather have a good team better for going into the season.
But if the hype's there, that means I probably have, at least on paper, a better team, right?
Yeah, I want the better team. It's hard to separate.
Now, if you're asking me, I mean, yeah, I want the better team.
But let's say that
I'm going for the other because I'm just used to having the expectations always be high and we just suck.
Are you saying
I don't know if you can do this, but let's say
the record's going to be the same no matter what?
Exactly. You're going
to
be.
Then I'd like to be the surprise team.
Yeah.
Because then that
you're going to be 8-4 this year.
Yeah.
Would you rather it come out of no hype?
Give me this.
Or people hyping you up that you might be 9-3, but.
Yeah. Like, would I rather go 8-4 this year or 8-4 in 2016? And which one would I rather relive? It's going to be this year. If this team goes 8-4, it'll be a great season. That team went 8-4, and we were all ready to fire the coach, and we should have in 2016. No, yeah. I'd much rather be the under the radar. Low expectations. If you're saying 8-4, now if you're saying
those first 10-2
or 11-1, then I'm saying yeah, just give me the hype at that point. Let me have the fun all summer and then put together a really good season.
Because I feel like fans do both. Any fans, any program. Not talking about Tennessee fans. Any fans, any program will complain that they're not being talked about as much, but then will also say, "I'm glad no one's talking about us this year. We're gonna sneak up and surprise some people and put some whooping on." You know, like. They'll do both almost just daily, just about different types of articles, posts, media members, whatever. Florida is, it's interesting he's talking about Florida, because Florida's the exact opposite. Like, they're hyped to the moon versus probably what Vegas has their over-under at, I would think. Even though it's
this
more
year?
Than, yeah, this year. Like, they're... they're overhyped for where the coaches put them in the coaches poll, which was not in the coaches poll. They would have been like 27th, I think. So, I mean, I think I'd rather be Tennessee and have more unknowns this year than be Florida. Because if Florida wins 7, people aren't going to be happy, right? Tennessee wins 7. He'll be like, okay, good first step on the way up. It's not about the mountaintop. It's the journey, right, Houston?
It's the climb. Every step I'm taking, every move I'm making, you know.
Here's the 5 most important conference games, according to Scarborough. September 8th, Georgia at South Carolina. Makes sense. It's very early. It's one of the very few early games that could... I mean, if Georgia's going to lose the division to anybody, they, you know, losing that game would go a long way.
Florida's over-under is 8.
Really?
That's the Las Vegas Superbook from July 8th.
Wow. All right.
I think that's a good number to put it at for Vegas. I mean, they obviously put it that way for a reason. But I'm looking at their schedule now.
Yeah, their schedule's a little different than Tennessee's for sure.
I mean, that's the thing. Like they're looking at the schedule, the team, and everything. So I don't think the win total necessarily means this team is better. I mean, Tennessee could be bad, but if they played the worst schedule in the country, they're going to win 8, and the best team in the country playing everybody that's also the best, they might win 8. Obviously, one's better than the other, but that's a look at records specifically.
Game number 2, five most important games in the SEC schedule, Florida at Mississippi State, September 29th. That's Dan Mullen going back to his old stomping grounds. Game number 3, Florida versus Georgia, October 27th.
We're just floating around.
So I'm saying. Florida and Tennessee, very similar last year. They both
hired
new coaches.
Nobody believes in us. Nobody thinks this year's Tennessee team's going to do anything. Nobody thinks we've got a chance against West Virginia, a chance against Florida.
Dude, Florida's
the
only team.
Against South Carolina.
Florida and Georgia are the only two teams on here with 2 games in the most important 5. Not even Auburn or Alabama are in any other games as important except for Auburn and Alabama, which comes next on November 24th, and then he wraps it up with LSU at Texas A&M late in the season and kind of points out that could be a big setup game for how people view Ed Orgeron and Jimbo Fisher, one maybe starting to trend towards firing and one making some decisions on how good of a hire it was.
LSU lost another quarterback.
Yeah, transferred away. It's going to be Joe Burrow, right? Burrows, plural.
Freshman quarterback Narquise, I believe is the last name, is the one transferring out of LSU.
Headed out.
But he was a 4-star.
It's a lot of Gator talk in the SEC primer. The rest of it's pretty much about Alabama. Heisman hopefuls and team with the most to lose or garbage like that.
I did hear a good argument for why, I can't remember who said it, but why Alabama will not win the national championship this year.
Why is that?
The drop-off at their coordinator positions. Should make you feel better if you're a Tennessee fan.
And then Scarborough loves Mississippi State.
Where did Alex Scarborough go to school? Do we know that? Can we find that?
Sounds like Mississippi State from this article. Because
Think about it. Think about it. He's giving Florida all these top games, and he's also saying how good Mississippi State is. This sounds like a guy who's trying to convince himself that Dan Mullen is the second coming. That's what it reads to me.
Yeah.
At least as I'm hearing it, not knowing anything about Alex Scarborough.
Don't immediately write off Mississippi State as a contender. It was only 4 years ago, in fact, that the Bulldogs are ranked number 1 in the country. So, yes, what might seem like the impossible can happen. All it takes is a transcendent quarterback, an Alabama loss or two, and the entire SEC can be turned on its head. This is Mississippi State as his playoff dark horse. Mississippi State in the playoff. Think about that. With a first-year head coach. While Nick Fitzgerald hasn't proven he's the caliber of Dak Prescott just yet, the senior isn't all that far off. Past 2 seasons, he's scored 66 total touchdowns, and there's the sense that he's only getting better as a passer. There's no mention of his like gruesome ankle injury he's having to come back from. The offensive line should be solid. Aris Williams is an underrated running back, as there is in the conference, and the receiver core has nowhere to go but up. And on defense, that's where the real opportunity lies, because it's not just that 2 all-SEC linemen are back. It's that they add Chauncey Rivers to the mix as well. He lists the linebackers, some secondary guys. He does the Ed Orgeron thing where he just lists the whole roster. If Alabama struggles, and granted that's a big if, then it's not crazy to think that Mississippi State has what it takes to come out of the West.
He did cover Alabama for a while. Hmm. So he, I don't know, maybe he didn't enjoy his time in Tuscaloosa.
He ends up by pointing out that Mississippi State's schedule is manageable. Non-conference games are garbage. Cross-division games are Kentucky and Florida. Getting Arkansas and Ole Miss in the final two games of the regular season sets up nicely for a strong close. If the SEC goes sideways, then why not Mississippi State? He points out that Auburn's schedule is pretty tough because a lot of their big games are on the road. That's why Auburn would not be the team coming out of the West if Alabama falters.
Okay.
You buying the Mississippi State hype?
No.
You were big on Nick Fitzgerald last year.
I like Nick Fitzgerald.
I give you full credit for identifying that they were, you know, through him, could win some games people didn't expect. I mean, they blasted. It was LSU, right? They blasted early. It was like, wow, yeah, mm-hmm. Look at this.
Yeah.
But this year.
No, I mean, I think they're going to be good, and I don't think they have a chance of beating Auburn. Or Alabama. They'll obviously beat Kentucky, their crossover. And now, could they beat Florida? Yeah. I think they could beat Florida.
Sure.
I don't think that would be crazy at all to see that. That's a tough second road game in a row for the Gators after, you know, they play in Neyland on the 22nd. We know that Dan Mullen's going to be, all over himself leading into that game, right? I mean, he's going to be – like, that's going to be a really weird week for Dan Mullen because, in a way, he's going to want to take credit for the hype at Mississippi State while also obviously trying to beat them. I just think that game is a psych-out game for Dan Mullen. Cowbells are going to be going crazy. That will probably be the best environment in the history of Mississippi State football. They're at home. I don't know when the game will be. I don't know if maybe CBS says, yeah, that's the 3:30 game we want. If not, it'll be a night game. Like, there's no way that game is at noon because of the drama surrounding it. So if you're asking me if Mississippi State can win that game, yeah, 100%. They can absolutely win that game. But I could also see them doing kind of what they do. And I mean, Moorhead, like, he's not familiar with the SEC either. Like, he's still got some, you know, He's going to have a learning curve too, but I would imagine just like Mullen probably looking ahead to that game, Moorhead's probably looking ahead to that one too. Like, I got to beat the guy that I replaced, who kind of used this as a stepping stone. I need to beat that guy with his own team and kind of cement myself as a fan favorite in Starkville. Do we find out where Alex Scarborough's from? I can't find it.
Yeah, I saw they covered Alabama for a time. But
sounds like a Gator. He sounds like a big old Gator.
Closet Gator, Alex Scarborough.
Sounds like he went there. That's what I think. I think he's trying. A lot of these guys that write for ESPN, there's a lot of Florida grads in the national media, mm-hmm. in like the, not like the national, like the subnational media that write a lot of the articles, that do a lot of the SEC lists, the preseason. And I just wonder if maybe they're trying to convince themselves, and so they're writing some Gator fluff pieces a little bit. Like, I don't know how you can feel so good about this Gator team when Felipe Franks is so far the best-looking quarterback in the bunch. Felipe Franks is awful. He's terrible. I know they got Van Jefferson cleared yesterday, so there's going to be some talent. I don't know. I don't know. We know that there's some kind of locker room issues. There's some off the field stuff. Mullen is trying to get everybody excited and trying to hype it up. And if it goes sideways in the first 4 or 5 weeks, I just think they could be in a world of hurt, a lot of pain, because I don't know how he reacts when the fans hate him. The fans at Mississippi State will never hate you as long as you're winning 5 or 6 games a year. You go to Florida and do that, they want you gone immediately. So if things don't go great, and this was a team that won 4 last year, I don't know how he handles it if Florida fans continue to be as, you know, unforgiving as they typically are.
Georgia had a few injury issues in their scrimmage over the weekend. We'll update you on that and then jump around to some different topics on the flip side. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio.
For Fox.
Final segment, three and out today. This segment brought to you by Alumni Hall.
And AlumniHall.com. If you aren't following them on Twitter, if you don't have Twitter, get one and then follow along. They do all kinds of special codes, secret giveaways, and sales that they announce kind of on Twitter and on their Instagram page. Again, both Alumni Hall UT, so on Twitter, at Alumni Hall UT. But they are your stop for brand new comfort color tees. Early season Nike has arrived, including the new team shoes in both men's and women's sizes. Tees, polos, office gear, tailgate gear, and more. And if you love the retro logos, they've got you covered on that too, including the Star Vols logo on the new Nike. And you can rep your state all the time with the best TriStar items. Just head on over to Alumni Hall. You can shop 24/7 there. And I know we have mostly Tennessee fans that listen, but if you are a fan of another school in the SEC, if you go to AlumniHall.com, you can see they have some other teams in and around the Southeast that they also carry gear for. So just go to AlumniHall.com, check your favorite team, and peruse all the gear you could ever need. Appreciate Alumni Hall jumping on board for football season, for the off season, and big sponsor of the Get on the Bus Tour. So
yeah, buddy.
Alumni Hall, gear up all season long.
Well, we were looking at if the SEC West goes haywire, the SEC East could go haywire with one game in week two. If South Carolina beats Georgia, the SEC East, all of a sudden the door will be cracked. And if Georgia has any issues with their West games, I mean, they play Auburn every year, of course. They play LSU, I think, is their other game this year. There could be a chance for someone else to get to Atlanta other than the Bulldogs. And over the weekend, I guess this question was asked to Kirby Smart in a way. I hate when media members do this. It sounds like someone said, hey, coach, would you consider your team unscathed after your scrimmage this weekend? Because Kirby Smart answered it this way. Eric Stokes, I think, cramped up a little bit. Tyreek McGee had a little foot injury, but I don't know the results of that yet. Unscathed to me would be exactly that. Those two things didn't seem serious. We'll know more later on. You go into these scrimmages a little worried because you've got guys on the ground more often. It seemed like we came out all right. Well, they've updated it. McGee is now going to miss the first few games of the season. And people were kind of saying, whoop, this is it. Could it be happening? You know, Georgia with some big games early. Is that where things could, you know, go weird in the SEC East?
It's South. Like, I know we're on Georgia, but I'm just trying to do a comparison. Like, in 2016, we kind of went in early and ruined Florida's shot. Does South Carolina do that to Georgia and then South Carolina stumbles later on?
I mean, I don't think South Carolina does not lose two or three SEC games, right?
Yeah,
Then Clemson obviously I think still beats them. But so,
but like if they were to finish the 8-4 type.
No, yeah, if they were to beat Georgia, then yeah, I think that's exactly what happens. I don't think South Carolina would beat Georgia and then run the table. I don't think necessarily that game would mean they're that good. I think they're a decent team. I'm just not. I don't think they're that good. I don't think they could beat Georgia either. But it, you know, we're prognosticating. So
yeah, I mean, it's people are just pointing to it because it's a road game for Georgia. It's week two. It's the first test either team will have. I can't remember who South Carolina is week one, but Georgia has like Austin Peay. So
yeah,
that'll be a nothing burger.
I'll say yes. There's a chance. Let me walk that back. Just because of what Will Muschamp's going to try to do to this game, right? He's going to try to run the ball, milk the clock, play decent defense, not get down by a bunch. So then if obviously something crazy happens, like a Deebo Samuel kick return, or he takes a slant to the house and things change, sure.
People are saying the McGee injury is a big deal for Georgia because not only is that South Carolina game one people are pointing to, but in week four, if he's still out, they go on the road to Missouri. And you want all your secondary guys available when you play Drew Locke and that sort of thing. I don't know.
Is he their number one corner or what is he? What's his exact role?
I thought he was
role?
Number two, but don't quote me on that.
He's a 5'10", 187-pound corner. I mean, they say he's likely to miss the first few games. They don't really know how many yet. They think he'll be back week three at the earliest. But we know how, I mean, it's a foot injury. So that it.
And
people are obviously looking for any news, a way they can then apply that to the season. So we'll see.
He's listed as the starting corner, according to our lads.
The right corner.
Yep.
Yeah. Who knows?
Which side are we looking at that from?
Right. Yeah. And a lot of teams do boundary and field anyway, even if they're listed left and right. So anyway, news on Georgia. Georgia's at LSU, a home against Auburn, their two West games. Of course, Florida's always neutral site. And then the Tennessee game is at home between the hedges for the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll see about that. South Carolina's West teams, they play Texas A&M every year. And then this year from the West, they're at Ole Miss. So I think that's one reason. If South Carolina beats Georgia, it's like, uh-oh. If Georgia can't beat Auburn, that gives South Carolina two games to play with in the SEC. And
well, good thing Tennessee's going to beat them, right, Davey?
Yep.
Feeling good about it. Welcome to the jungle in Columbia.
Be a three-point game.
It wouldn't be the weirdest thing that's ever happened if South Carolina beats Georgia, Georgia loses to Auburn, and then South Carolina starts losing games like crazy, and it's like, holy crap, we got another year with a really bad SEC East team that's going to go to Atlanta.
I mean,
no matter which one it is.
Tennessee kept them out in 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
When somehow Butch Jones beat, well, I guess he always had Spurrier's number, but
noon game, the Marquez North one-handed catch, Pilardi hitting the field goal to win it.
Yep,
I remember that one. That's when you thought things were looking up.
If you're looking for a way for the SEC East to go crazy, obviously it starts with Georgia losing. Anyway,
yeah, I'm not exactly expecting that.
No,
I don't know that they're going to be as good as maybe everybody thinks. I think they're still going to be just fine. I don't think they get to a national championship game this year.
I think if Georgia loses at South Carolina, unless something really weird happens, I probably would still pick Georgia to win the East.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
That'd be a single-digit game.
You know.
Calling the shots now.
That'll be a single-digit game?
Georgia-South Carolina.
All right.
So South Carolina, good enough to hang with Georgia, but bad enough to lose to Tennessee.
It's all about when it happens, man.
All right.
All right.
So we've got Congbo All-SEC. Tennessee's beating South Carolina, but South Carolina keeping it within single digits against Georgia.
But West Virginia kills Tennessee.
Right.
No.
Just keeping track of the predictions. The Davey Hudson board.
I think the line's good. I have right now, I have the score for the West Virginia-Tennessee game being, and I know we're 2 weeks out, but I've kind of already thought
don't
this
know
through.
Who the starter's going to be at quarterback.
I don't know who
like
it's going to be.
But you've got the score.
Shoot your shot, Davey.
42-34.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. All right.
42-34.
Mm-hmm.
Put it down.
Okay. Well, Houston, you knew this before everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I just
want to get your take.
Okay. Well, lay it out there.
It was announced yesterday, after many years, that the Lady Vol and UConn rivalry will resume next year in Connecticut, and the year after back in Knoxville. Do you have any thoughts as to the move by Tennessee after Holly Warlick gets the extension?
I think it's a good move.
Okay.
I don't think it'll go well, at least early.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think if you want to say that you're one of the premier teams in women's basketball, you should play the other premier teams in women's basketball. And right now, it basically begins and ends with UConn.
Do we think this was a condition by Fulmer to give Holly the extension? Like, yeah, I'll give you the extension, but you're going to play UConn again because I need to see you against the best in the country and see where you stack up next year? We're going to do this, and that's how I'm going to judge you. I'm giving you the extension, so you're going to get the buyout, but you're going to have to prove it to me against the best. Prove to me that you can get to and win a national championship, or at least have that type of team. I mean, Gino Auriemma, you know, you can hate him if you want, but the guy's he's a good coach. He's a technician, and somehow a good motivator, even though he's a goofball kind of.
I don't know if those two things go together.
Okay,
they're not going to play this year.
No, I know.
So
I mean, you couldn't get them on the schedule that fast,
right?
Like you just couldn't.
So it's and then but it's you a scheduled road trip them to UConn in 2 years. That could be rough.
We won last time we were there,
and then they'll come back the year in the third. What's her extension through now? She has 4 years.
Mm-hmm. 4 years, including this season.
So
you'll play them in Knoxville on year three of her four.
All right. It's a good move for Tennessee, right?
It's a moneymaker, right? I mean, that home game on the schedule might that'll probably have more attendance and make more money and get more publicity than like five other SEC games. Right? Like the five worst games on the home schedule in conference, that game will make you more money and get you more pub than all of those. If you're Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're looking at the gate. So is that Fulmer saying, yeah, I'll give you the raise and we'll get your buyout, but I'm making all that money back that I might have to pay you when they come to town and we sell out and, you know, CBS is here or whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Did you see the Twitter beef between the two accounts go back and forth?
That's a fine way to announce
it.
Yeah. It's weird to me, though. Like,
is this bad? Like, what's the negative here?
The negative is...
You're probably going to be facing a juggernaut.
You're going to get beat by 40.
Well, I mean, yeah, like they're always good, but you've also recruited well too. Like this, you know, we've talked about last year's class and this year's class. Maybe those players as juniors and seniors or sophomores and juniors, excuse me, you know, maybe that's like, okay, you've proven you can recruit. We're going to give you a year to develop them, and then you're going to have to start playing UConn. There you go. Now we'll know how good you and your staff really are at developing, at coaching, at game planning, at scheme. I mean, like, there's no out at that point, right? Like, you got your extension, you got your raise, you have the great recruiting classes. Go show me that you're one of the top coaches in the land. Prove it to me. Then I'll think about another extension and another raise or so on and so forth. So I think that's fair by Fulmer. The only weird part to me was why this rivalry kind of got canceled in the first place. I mean, I guess you can't leave it canceled forever. But, I mean, it was canceled because, you know, Pat didn't think that Geno was following all the rules in recruiting. That he was bending some rules with who their recruits were allowed to meet while they were on campus, who they happened to run into in the tunnel after the game, some of the things he said to recruits about, you know, Pat and her coaching staff and what it was like at Tennessee. So it's kind of weird that it's like, okay, yeah, now we're just going to overlook all that and bring it back. That said, you gotta do it if you're Tennessee. I mean, it's been a long time.
And
strangely, like, it didn't punish UConn. They've won however many, and they probably should have won however many more. I mean, Mississippi State knocks them out a couple years ago. They had the weird loss to Stanford the year Tennessee won in 08. They lost, was it North Carolina in 07? I mean, like, it's strange that you haven't met them in a tournament since. You have not met them in a tournament, a Final Four, a Sweet 16, anywhere since this thing was canceled. And so now to just, hey, it's back on the schedule. I don't know. That was the weird thing to me.
Well, Notre Dame won the national championship, and you played them last year,
and you had Notre Dame.
Isn't that the weird game where Tennessee's way ahead?
Tennessee was up like 27 at Notre Dame,
and Notre Dame won by 14.
Yeah, I think they scored. I think Tennessee scored like 8 points in the second half or something, and Notre Dame couldn't miss.
Unreal.
But I mean, that's scheme, that's game plan. I'm not trying to make an excuse for Tennessee.
Notre Dame's the team that beat Connecticut last year in the Final Four in overtime, and then went on to beat Mississippi State to win the national championship. I'd forgotten that. Mississippi State really chucked that game away. Golly. That guy will never recover.
Yeah, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you're recruiting well. Like, you can't, I don't know. It didn't necessarily feel like Tennessee was ducking UConn. It felt like I'm not going to compete against you if you're going to do these things on the recruiting trail.
Well, that's the way it started. This is a good move because it feels like now Philip Fulmer, Holly Warlick, Tennessee's program isn't ducking anybody. When you go out and schedule UConn, you're saying, "Hey, we're still Tennessee." So that's the right move to schedule it.
I mean,
now how will they do the rest of it, and will they be able to go toe to toe with them at some point? That's the only question left.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the John Adams article when the extension came through. That they should have, you know,
Just extend it or more. Yeah, they don't care.
Like give her 6 years or go get a real coach. But this is kind of like the in between. Like clearly you don't care. So why don't you just don't care all the way? But getting UConn back on the schedule says, oh, they are holding themselves to a higher standard. They are going to be accountable to the reputation as one of the top programs in the country. So I think it's a good move, but you got to prove it, right? I mean, you can't roll the ball out there against UConn. I don't care who you are.
No. Could go bad in a hurry. Talk Sports is up next. John Reed, Cody McClure, and Ben Lee. Keep it right here. We'll be back tomorrow for Houston Crest, Davey Hudson. I'm Nate Hodges. You've been listening to 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville.